not. She is not. She is not herself. She has no body and she is falling without falling down. Darkness rushes past her, through her, because she is not her. And her first thought is how good it feels to be not her. To be no one. To be nothing at all. The world came back in pieces. The pulse in Kate's ears, the couch beneath her back, the voices somewhere overhead. You should have called someone. I called you. I'm not a doctor, Riley. I'm not even a medic yet. Kate dragged her eyes open and saw a ceiling streaked with daylight. Her head ached and her mouth was dry, the salt taste of blood coating the back of her throat. All she wanted was for them to shut up and let her go back to sleep.
She should go to a hospital.
What am I supposed to tell them? My friend got hurt fighting monsters? I'm pretty sure she's not even supposed to be in Prosperity. Riley swam in her vision. Over his shoulder, his boyfriend Malcolm was pacing.
How long has she been out?
6 hours? Almost 7? I should have called sooner, but...
Too loud,
she groaned, pushing herself upright. She quickly wished she hadn't. The room swayed and her pulse slammed inside her head.
Son of a bitch.
Riley knelt beside her, one hand tight on her shoulder.
Kate?
Jesus, you scared me. Are you all right? Malcolm leaned in, flashing a penlight in her eyes, which did nothing for the pain in her head.
What happened?
She asked. Riley was pale.
You showed up here looking like hell, locked yourself in the bathroom, and passed out. I had to break down the door.
Kate remembered cold tile against her skin.
Sorry.
Malcolm checked her pulse against his watch.
What's the last thing you remember?
She hesitated, her mind filling with fragments. The scream, a man holding knives, a body against glass, sirens and a shadow. The sense of falling. Falling into what? Instead of trying to work backward from that, she started at the beginning.
The restaurant.
Riley nodded.
It's all over the news, he said, holding out her tablet.
There it was, splashed across the screen. Romance ruined. Shunned lover kills 12. The banner photo was a shot of the restaurant's front. A streamer of bright yellow tape caught in the air. A sheet covered the bodies.
Good thing you didn't go inside, said Riley.
And then,
you didn't go inside, right?
No, she'd stopped in the street, caught by the sudden, unexpected horror of the scene.
We called it in as soon as you told us, but by the time the police got there, it was over.
Did you see anything?
See anything? Fragments drifted together in her head.
Apparently, the guy just showed up, went into the kitchen, and took the knives.
That man, so calm, like he wasn't even there.
They're not releasing names yet, said Riley. But someone leaked it to the press that his ex-wife was inside.
So he had motive,
said Malcolm.
Motive, thought Kate.
It could have been an ordinary crime. A gruesome one, yes, but something human. Except for the fact it wasn't.
You were right about the explosion, she said. The string of murder-suicides. There's nothing normal about this.
Are you sure?
She remembered the wrongness in the killer's eyes, a pair of silver discs shining in the dark. She'd seen the shadow, followed it. But there the memory faltered, dissolving into darkness and the press of cold.
Any survivors? She asked.
One,
said Malcolm.
She was rushed to the hospital in critical condition.
Kate stilled.
Why do I sense a but coming?
They got her stabilized, but the moment she woke up, well, she snapped. Killed a doctor. Attacked two nurses, too. If she hadn't been as bad off as she was, it would have been worse for everyone. They ended up quarantining the wing, put the nurses under observation in case whatever she had was contagious.
Kate pressed her palms to her eyes, trying to quell the headache, trying to smother the feelings that rose in her throat at the word contagious. She'd been there. She'd seen. Kate, pressed Riley in a too even tone. How are you feeling? Like hell, she thought. Like hell, but like myself. She should go to a doctor, said Malcolm. She is fine, snapped Kate. Her phone chirped. And she has to go to work. She got to her feet, steadied herself a moment, and turned toward the hall. Is that such a good idea? Asked Riley. Her temper flared. I said I'm fine. And I'm just supposed to believe you? Kate spun. I don't care if you believe me. You're not my parent and I'm not your pet project. That's uncalled for. Hey, cut in Malcolm. Everyone calm down. Kate scrubbed at her face. Look, she said slowly. You're right. I don't feel great. But I've got to go to work. I'll bail if I have to. Promise. Riley opened his mouth, but in the end, said nothing. If there was one sound Kate hated, it was the bell above the cafe door. What was the point, when the counter faced the door and she could see the people coming in? At this time of day, the line stretched all the way back to the door itself, the constant open and close eliciting a near-continuous chime. Next, she called impatiently. To take her mind off the bell, she tried to focus on the customers themselves and play a game called Guess the Secret. The woman in the purple dress two sizes too small, sleeping with her handyman. The man on the cell, embezzling. The one in front of her right now, addicted to sleeping pills. That was the only thing that explained how long it was taking for him to order. A vein in Kate's temple twitched. Next! A man shuffled forward without looking up from his phone. Sir? He was talking softly, and she realized he was taking a call. Sir? He held up a finger and kept talking. Sir? Annoyance rose inside her, taking a sudden sharp turn into anger, and before Kate realized what she was doing, her hand shot across the counter. She snatched the cell phone and hurled it against the exposed brick wall installed to give the coffee bean that extra homey charm. It smashed, and when the man's head finally came up, veins bulging as he stared, not at her, but at the pieces of his cell raining down the wall, Kate's first thought was of reaching out and snapping his neck, of how nice that would feel. The urge stole through her, so simple and quick, she almost didn't notice. She could see it. Clear as glass, could feel his flesh beneath her hands, hear the clean snap of bone. And the very idea was like a cold compress on a fevered head, a balm on a burn, so sudden and soothing that her fingers actually started curling. That little voice in her head, the one that said, don't, suddenly replaced by one that said, do. Before she thought, no, stop, and came jarringly back to her senses. It was like being thrown out of a pleasant dream and into a nightmare. The wonderful, certain calm replaced by a wave of sickness and a lancing pain behind her eyes. What had she just done? What had she almost done? Kate forced herself backward, away from the counter, away from the stunned line and the man who'd now begun to shout, tore the apron over her head, and fled. Chapter 2. She dropped her bag beside the door. Riley and Malcolm were no longer there, thank God for small mercies. Her pulse was still a raging beat inside her skull, but whatever had come over her back in the coffee shop was gone, leaving only a headache and a pressure behind her eyes. A migraine? But Kate had never gotten migraines, and she was pretty sure their side effects didn't include the sudden desire for violence. Violence. Her mind snagged on that word. And the night before came back again. The man and the shadow, both so steady, so calm. The emptiness in the man's face as the monster's own seemed to fill out. And then, the alley. Kate standing face to face with the monster. the nothing of it, all cold and hollow hunger and those silver discs, like mirrors. Her vision doubled and she had to close her eyes for a second to keep from losing her balance. She went to the bathroom and ran the tap, splashing handful after handful of cool water on her face and neck. She dragged her gaze to the mirror, surveying her pallid complexion, the scar that traced her jaw, the flat blue of her... Kate froze. There was something in her left eye. When she raised her chin, it caught the light, shining like a lens flare, the kind of thing that belonged in a photograph, not a human face. It was a trick of the light. It had to be. But no matter how she turned her head, it stayed. She leaned in, close enough to fog the mirror with her breath, close enough to see the interruption in the dark blue circle of her iris. It looked like a silver crack, a sliver of light, a mirror shard. It was so small, and yet the longer she stared, the more it seemed to stretch across her vision, blotting out the room and swallowing her sight. Kate squeezed her eyes shut, trying to pull her mind free, to hold herself in the here and now. But she was already falling forward into a memory. The window is open, the fields outside waving in the breeze. She sits on the floor with a pile of necklaces, trying to pick apart the tangled chains, while her mother hums by the window. Her small fingers dance over the metal links. But the harder she tries, the more tangled everything gets. Annoyance rises like a tide turning to anger, with each failed attempt. Every worsening knot, the anger spreads from the tangled chains to her mother at the window. Her mother who doesn't seem to care what a mess she made. Her mother who isn't even there to make it right. Her mother who left her alone with monsters. "Get out of my head," snarled Kate, slamming a soap dish into the mirror. It struck the glass with a splintering crash as she lurched back to her senses, to herself. She dropped the dish and retreated a few steps, sinking onto the edge of the tub. Her hands were shaking. A cobweb crack fractured the image in the glass. She'd broken the monster's hold. But it was still there, inside her head. And she remembered now. Its face from the alley. Seeing herself in its eyes and falling down into that dark, violent place. Remembered Riley's voice calling her name, pulling her back. But she'd left something behind. Or it had. This sliver of itself. This crack in her head. How was she supposed to get it out? How did you hunt something that had no shape, a shadow that made puppets out of people? How could you destroy a void? Kate's head spun, but as her pulse steadied and the panic and confusion cooled, her focus sharpened, the way it always did at the beginning of a hunt. It was a monster, no matter what form it took, and monsters could always be hunted. Killed. You just had to find them first. Kate's head came up. They were connected somehow, she and this thing. And connections usually went two ways. She caught a look at the mirror. From this angle, she couldn't see her reflection, couldn't see anything but the cracks running down the mirror's surface. But if the monster could get into her head, could she do the same? Kate rose to her feet and approached the mirror. She curled her fingers around the sink's edge, anchoring herself, and tried to steady her breathing. She'd never been one for meditation. She would rather hit something than try to find stillness. But she went looking for it now as her gaze drifted up. The instant the shard caught her eye, she felt the pull. But Kate resisted, charting a course from her chin, along the line of her scar, up her jaw, before shifting over lips, up nose. "Show me," she thought, as her gaze finally reached the shard. The silver blossomed. And then she was falling forward, but not as fast as before. It was more like a slow and steady slide, the ground tipping away beneath her. She gripped the counter hard as the silver spread across her senses, tangled through her head, and something that wasn't a voice whispered a humming cloud of want and hurt and change and fight and make and kill. And the ground began to fall away faster and faster until she is trapped in another memory. The night is black and she is in her mother's car, white noise blaring through her head, her mother's cheek against the wheel. "Where are you?" she wonders, as red eyes multiply beyond the broken glass, and there, again, is the anger, the pain, the burning need to stop, she thought, dragging her mind not back, not out, but through. Pressure in her head, against her palms, as back in the car. Her mother's eyes open wide, marred by a single silver crack. "Where are you?" she asks. And the car, the night, the vision shudder and give way to cold, to nothing. And it moves in and out of shape, of shadows, through a place, singing with promise, a city carved in two. So many dark thoughts, so many monstrous minds, so much kindling just waiting to catch. Kate lurched backward, out of the vision. Her nose was bleeding, and her head pounded, and her hands ached from gripping the sink. But none of it mattered, because Kate knew where the monster was going. Knew where, somehow, it already was. Verity. 6 months condensed into a single bag. The same one she'd first brought with her to Prosperity. The same things inside. Cash, clothes, fake ID, a pair of iron spikes, a silver lighter with a hidden switchblade, a handgun. It should have made leaving easy, but it didn't. She told herself it was just a mission. Told herself she was coming back, even as the echoes of a city she had once called home burned against her retinas, and the cold shadow twisted through her head. Kate didn't know how to fight this thing, didn't know how to kill it, but she knew she had to try. She scooped up her tablet from the coffee table and sank onto the couch. The device booted to reveal the carnage from the restaurant, still on display where Riley had left it. 12 dead. A violent thought turned into a violent deed. And now the monster was in Verity, a place that thrived on violence, that fed and nurtured it. And Kate couldn't shake the idea that she had led the shadow there. That she had let it see into her mind, had shown it a place rife with potential. Moth, meet flame. But where had it come from? There had been no massive attacks, nothing on the scale she imagined necessary to create something like this. Was it the product instead of Prosperity's slow poison? A city's decay? And what would a thing like this do in a city like hers? She'd already seen what it could do. Hell, she'd felt the effects herself. The darkness stirred in her even now, a want whispering through her pulse, telling her to reach for the gun in her bag. Instead, she took a deep breath and opened a new message window. She addressed it to the wardens and dropped every photo she had of the Heart Eaters into the file, along with a message. "Pure metal only. Aim for heart." Her finger hovered over the send. It wasn't enough. She knew that. The wardens weren't hunters, but they would find one. Someone stupid enough to do what she'd been doing. Maybe even someone better. She told herself she had to go. Had to warn the FTF. Warn August. She hit send and rose to her feet, shoving the tablet into her bag. By the time she reached the door, her phone was ringing. Riley. She didn't answer, didn't let herself stray from the task at hand. It was just like any other hunt, she told herself, letting her limbs take over, moving with a purpose she wasn't sure she felt. She didn't know what she felt, but she knew how to move. She paused at the door, scribbled out a note on a pad of paper. She locked the door behind her and slid the key beneath, listening to it skid away across the wooden floor, out of sight, out of reach. After that, she didn't let herself look back. Running was just like every other habit. It got easier with practice. Riley's building had a parking garage in the back, and as Kate scanned the rows of cars, she regretted ditching her father's sedan when she got to the city. She could have kept it, but everything about the car said Verity, said money, said Callum, down to the gargoyle on the hood. So she'd left it on the side of the road 25 miles from Prosperity's capital in case anyone came looking for her. In the end, no one did. And now she was stuck searching for a ride out of town. Thank God the weather was nice, she thought, stumbling across a coupe with the windows halfway down. She didn't even have to break the glass. She tossed her bag into the passenger seat and climbed in, overwhelmed by sudden déjà vu. Another life, another world. August breathless and Kate wounded, her fingers shaking from the fight with the Malkai as she threw the car into gear. Her cell buzzed in her pocket. Kate didn't answer, kept her hands busy prying off the ignition's cover and splicing the wires. The engine sparked, sputtered, sparked, started. She hit the gas. Chapter 3.
Please, please.
Our father, Warden.
What do you want? Get off me! Burn in hell!
I haven't done anything wrong.
Let me go. Please.
Humans, thought Sloane. Always talking. There were 8 of them, kneeling on the warehouse floor. Men and women with bruised faces and hands bound behind their backs. They were filthy, half-starved, dressed in an assortment of suits and dresses and casual attire, as though they'd been snatched right off the street or out of their homes. Which, of course, they had. Late afternoon light streamed through cracks in the windows and doors, but there was work to be done. Besides, thought Sloane, letting a hand pass into a beam of light, it was important to remind the humans that while the sun may weaken him, a weak Malkai was still more dangerous than a strong human. The sun turned his skin translucent and his bones dark, and for an instant the prisoners stilled and stared as if hoping he might burst into flame. They were quickly disappointed. When he did not burn, did not so much as wince, the whining started up again.
Please,
don't hurt me. We haven't done—
Sloane let his hands slip back into shadow. Be quiet. Behind the kneeling form stood 4 more humans, unbound save for the metal collars circling their throats. The fangs met Sloane's gaze, hungry for approval, while those on their knees shivered in fear. He rapped a nail thoughtfully against his teeth.
This is all of them?
Yes, sir, said one of the fangs, quick as a dog. Engineers from the fridges, just like you asked.
Sloane nodded, turning his attention to the quivering shapes on the concrete floor.
The brightest minds, he mused.
A man began to sob. Sloane brought the tip of his boot to the man's knee.
You, what did you do before?
When the man didn't answer, a fang kicked him in the side. One of the other prisoners let out a short, terrified sound that only made Sloane hungry.
Software, stammered the man. Open drive. Internal access.
Sloane clicked his tongue and moved on.
What about you? Come now. Don't be shy.
Electrical,
answered the second.
Plumbing,
said the third. One by one they shared their expertise. Technical, biological, mechanics, computers. Sloane paced, his agitation growing. And then the final captive answered,
Civil.
Sloane slowed, coming to a stop before her.
What does that mean?
She hesitated.
I worked on buildings, construction, demolition.
Sloane's mouth drew into a smile. He brought a sharpened nail to her chin.
You
he said. And you, he added to the one who knew mechanics. And you, he said to the electrician. Congratulations. You've all found new employment. The Fangs hauled the three engineers to their feet, and Sloane turned his attention to the rest of the captives, who clearly didn't know whether to be distraught or relieved.
The rest of you, he said with a sweep of his hand, are free to go.
They looked at him, wide-eyed. He pointed at the warehouse door 50 feet away.
Go on, before I change my mind.
That was enough to jog them loose. All five scrambled to their feet, hands still bound before them. Sloane rolled his head on his shoulders and watched them rise, stumble, run, racing for the door. Three of them made it. But then Sloane was moving, letting that simple animal self take over as he slipped between shadows. He caught the fourth by her throat and snapped it cleanly before spinning to grab the fifth, catching the man just as his fingers skimmed the warehouse door.
So close,
thought Sloane, sinking his fangs deep into the man's throat. Somewhere, someone screamed. But for a beautiful moment, Sloane's world was nothing but a dying heartbeat and a wave of red. He let the body fall with a thud to the concrete.
Changed my mind, he said, drawing a square from his pocket and wiping his mouth.
The surviving engineers were sobbing into their hands or holding their heads. Even the Fangs had the good sense to go pale.
Clean this place up, he ordered the Fangs, turning away. And bring my new pets to the tower. And if anything happens to them in your care, I will pull the teeth from your skulls and make you swallow them.
He threw open the doors and stepped outside. Chapter 4 The crossroads was a massive center, part shopping mall, part truck stop, part cafeteria, a palace of polished white linoleum. It was the first place you hit on your way into Prosperity, and the last place on your way out, and Kate hadn't been there since the day she left Faraday. She found a pair of sunglasses in the car's center console and put them on, hiding the silver crack as she went inside. She bypassed the food halls for a line of vending machines and caught her reflection in a dispenser's steel surface, her face distorted by the warp of the metal. She looked away and punched in the code for a cup of coffee. When the machine jammed, Kate took a few slow breaths. She hadn't lost her temper at any of the drivers, hadn't so much as sworn when someone cut her off, despite the whisper in her head, the longing, stealing over her like a blanket, to speed up and up and up until someone crashed. She punched in her order again, and when the coffee finally came out, she downed the drink in a single long gulp, ignoring the way it burned her throat. Two hallways down, she found the vast wall of rentable square lockers. The hall was empty, and she knelt in front of a cubby on the bottom row and reached into the narrow gap between the bottom of the locker and the linoleum floor. 6 months earlier, Kate had stopped at the crossroads, not knowing when or if she'd ever come back. But her father had been a strategist as well as a dictator, and one of his few bloodless sayings was this:
only fools get cornered.
In Callum Harker's decade-long rise to the top, he always had a way out. Cars across the city, safe houses and stashed weapons, the home beyond the waste and the box under the floor filled with fake papers. The only kind of trail you were supposed to leave was one you yourself could follow home. After several maddening seconds, Kate's fingers snagged the corner of the packet and she drew out a single padded envelope. Inside were the last remnants of another life. A few folded bills and a bundle of IDs, school card, driver's license, 2 credit cards, all under the name Catherine Olivia Harker. A whole life reduced to the contents of an envelope. Kate emptied it into her bag, then began shedding the last 6 months of her identity, shoving papers and ID into the envelope until all that was left of her time in Prosperity was her cell phone. Kate weighed it in her palm. It was still off, and she knew she should leave it that way, put it in the envelope with the rest, and walk away. But some traitorous thing inside her, not the monster, but something all too human, held down the power button. A few seconds later, the screen filled with missed calls and messages. She should never have hesitated, should never have turned the phone on. But she had, and she couldn't unsee the latest text. Riley. Not like this. Kate swore softly to herself and called him. Riley picked up on the second ring. Where are you? He sounded breathless. She'd spent half the drive planning what she'd say, but now nothing came out.
I mean, what the hell, Kate? First B hears you lost your shit at work and then you just up and leave? No word?
Kate ran a hand through her hair, swallowed.
I left a note. Oh, you mean, sorry, duty calls? That's your definition of a note? What the fuck is going on?
Kate winced. Riley never swore.
Is this about what you saw at the restaurant? What are we dealing with here?
We aren't dealing with anything, she said. I'm working this one myself.
Why?
He cracked his shin audibly against something and swore again under his breath.
What's going on?
Kate leaned back against the cold metal of the lockers and tried to keep her voice light. It's complicated. I've got a lead, but it's not in Prosperity, and I don't know how long it'll take. That's why I sent the files, just in case. She couldn't finish that sentence, so she changed course. I'll be back as soon as it's done. Tell the wardens.
Will I be lying?
I hope not.
Where are you going?
Home. The word scraped her throat. And then, because Riley had given her so much and she had given him so little, she added, to Verity. Riley let out a long, shaky breath, but there was no surprise in his silence, as if he'd known all along. When he spoke, his voice was urgent.
Listen to me. Whatever's going on, whatever you're running away from or toward, I just want you to know.
Kate swiped a tear from her cheek and killed the call. Before he could call back, she switched the phone off and dropped it in the envelope, sliding the contents beneath the lockers for safekeeping. The bathrooms were as clean as the rest of the crossroads, pristine in an industrial sort of way. A mirror ran the length of one wall above a bank of sinks, and Kate set her sunglasses on the counter and washed her face, wishing she could scrub away the call with Riley, the doubt he'd kicked up like dust inside her head. She was doing the right thing, wasn't she? She knew the city and the vision, knew she was headed in the right direction. Unless she was wrong. The shadow was in her head, weaving through her memories, her darkest thoughts and fears. What if she was only seeing what it wanted? What if she'd left Prosperity for nothing? What if... Enough! She knew the difference between truth and lie, between vision and dream, between her mind and the monster's. Didn't she? She looked up and found her gaze in the mirror. Her stomach turned. The crack in her left eye was larger, stealing across the blue. Was it spreading on its own, or was she worrying it like a wound? She hesitated, weighing the potential damage against the need for certainty, all the while losing ground against the shard's strange pull. The need won out. Kate held her gaze.
Where are you?
She whispered. It was the same question she'd asked herself 1,000 times over the years, whenever she wanted to imagine herself somewhere else, someone else. But the darkness answered by pulling her forward, down into the hallway of the house, beyond the waist, dead flowers on the sill, a broken picture on the floor, a coat of dust as thick as paint on everything, and she has never felt so alone. It buries her, that sadness, swallows her whole. The only sound, a voice, her voice, echoing through an empty house. Where are you? She goes looking for a pair of silver eyes, but the rooms are all empty. And then she sees it. The body in the hall, the bullet hole, the singed circle in its throat. She crouches as his eyes drift open, wide as moons, holds its gaze as the house shudders, shatters into blood everywhere, splashed like paint over the ground, up the walls, the bodies strewn like shadows, their fire all burned out, nothing now but shells, in gray and green and letters stamped on bloody sleeves, F.T.F. Kate pulled free. She was back at the counter, gasping for air. The harsh white light blurred her vision, and blood dripped from her nose, and she could almost hear the shard throwing out fresh cracks, like the sound of splitting ice inside her skull. It took her an instant to realize she wasn't alone. An older woman was at her side, one hand tight on her sleeve and a wet wad of paper towels in the other. Her lips were moving, but Kate's good ear was ringing and the words came through broken and studded with static. "I'm fine," she said, painfully aware of the sunglasses sitting on the sink and the splinter of silver in her eye. The white noise died just as the woman put a hand on Kate's cheek. "Let me see, darling. I used to be a nurse." "No," she gasped, jerking her head away. Contagious. That was the word Malcolm had used. Kate was already sick. The last thing she needed was to infect anyone else. But when she tried to pull free, the woman caught her face in both hands and angled her chin up, tutting as if Kate were some disobedient child. And then the woman stilled, her eyes going wide, and Kate's chest lurched, because she'd obviously seen the silver. But all she said was, "You've got a pair of eyes on you," and pressed the damp towels to Kate's nose, as if that was all there was to it. "Thank you," murmured Kate, trying to hide the tremor in her voice, the surprise, the relief. But the moment the woman was gone, she slumped against the counter, hands shaking. Well, thought Kate grimly, at least she wasn't contagious. "Now leaving Prosperity," announced the sign. There was no guard tower, no armed checkpoint, no penalty for trying to get out, just an open gate. And then she was in the buffer zone, the mile-long stretch of neutral land between territories. She came to the four-way stop, the same one she'd passed through before, and was hit by another moment of déjà vu. The base of her skull prickled as she pulled forward, taking the road toward Verity. The signal on the radio failed. The road ahead was empty. "Turn around," said a voice in her head. "Turn around while you still can." But it was already being drowned out by the thought of her iron spikes, of her gun, of her bare hands sinking into... "Damn it," she thought, gripping the wheel. Keeping that voice out, it was like trying to keep your eyes open on the road at night, fatigue wearing you down a little more with every yawn, the slippery slope between a blink and something deadly. She slowed as the Verity border came into sight. The barricade was down and a soldier emerged from the patrol building as Kate adjusted her sunglasses and slowed to a stop. She shifted the car into neutral but didn't turn the engine off, letting her fingers rest on the gear shift. The guard wasn't that old, maybe in his early 20s, a little on the squat side. A patch on his uniform marked him as a Prosperity citizen. The surrounding territories of Temperance, Fortune, and Prosperity took turns manning the Verity border. He had an assault rifle slung on a strap, but at the sight of Kate, he swung the weapon back over his shoulder. Oh, the perks of being perpetually underestimated. Kate rolled the window down. "Hi there."
"I'm sorry, miss. You've got to turn around."
She opted for naive innocence, raising her eyebrows behind her glasses. "Why?" The guard looked at her like she was missing a vital piece.
"The Verity border's been closed for months."
"I thought it was open again." He shook his head apologetically. "Huh," she said, pretending to squint into the sun as she scanned the crossing for other signs of life. "Well, that's a drag. How long have you been at this post?" She scanned his gear for a name tag. "Benson?"
2 years.
And who did you piss off to get landed here? He chuckled, leaning his elbow on the hood.
Every now and then someone tries to cross. I don't know what makes them do it. If they got friends egging them on or a death wish or they think the stories are just stories. I don't know and I don't care. Protocol is protocol. It's for your own good, miss.
Harker, cut in Kate. He twitched. Does that name mean anything to you? She pressed, the cheerfulness bleeding from her voice as her left hand closed around the gun tucked into the driver's side door. The darkness in her rushed forward at the touch, a current washing over her, trying to sweep her away. It should. My father was Callum Harker. You know, the man who kept monsters like pets inside that hellhole. Look around, Benson. All your cameras, all your weapons, all your everything is facing the other way. Do you know why that is? Because your job is to keep anyone and anything from getting out. It doesn't matter who goes in. Don't believe me? Just look. He actually took his eyes off her just for a second, and in that second she raised her gun. Benson looked back and actually jumped, lifting his hands in an automatic plea. Do it, whispered the thing in her head, in her hand, in her blood. It will be so easy. It will feel so good. Her finger drifted toward the trigger. I am crossing that border today. Doubt swept across the soldier's face.
Like you'd actually...
She fired. The desire had closed around her hand like a second grip, squeezed the trigger for her, but she'd felt it coming just in time and shifted the barrel several inches wide. Benson stared in horror.
You crazy bitch!
Open the gate, she said through clenched teeth. I honestly don't think I'll miss a second time. The soldier backed away and punched a code into the box by the patrol door. The barricade began to lift.
We're just trying to keep you safe.
Kate cocked her head. Haven't you heard? She said, shifting the car into gear. There's no such thing. She gunned the engine and the car shot forward into the waste. Not anymore. Chapter 5. The face in the mirror was covered in blood. It dotted August's cheek, splashed across the front of his fatigues. Red and black, black and red. He turned the shower on, spun the tap until the hot water was all the way up, and stripped off his clothes, shivering as the air met the tallies on his skin. He hadn't slept, hadn't been able to settle down long enough, so he'd gone back out again and again, trying to scrub Rez and Alice from his mind, taking on any and every mission. When his own team retired, he joined another, and another, made himself a shield and a weapon, let the trouble come to him. The night was a blur of violence behind his eyes, but the restlessness was gone, excised by action, leaving only an absence in its place. He stepped into the scalding stream and bit back a gasp. The water burned, each drop a prick of fire on his skin. The pain was shallow, but he found himself clinging to it the way he'd once clung to hunger. A way of taking control, of reminding himself that he could feel, that he wasn't... A monster, taunted Leo in his patronizing way. At his feet, blood and grime swirled down the drain, and August leaned his head against the tile wall, his vision blurring as fatigue washed up against him. He wasn't sore. That was the wrong word. Soreness was a physical thing, a product of tired muscles, strained bodies. But there was an ache all the way down to his core. He was empty, like the bodies he'd left behind, hollow without that spark of life. Humans and monsters both reduced to empty shells. Stardust to stardust, and... He turned the shower off and stepped out, slicking his wet hair back off his face. The room was full of steam. When he wiped the fog from the mirror and saw his gray eyes reflected in the glass, he couldn't shake the feeling they had gotten darker. Leo's eyes had been black,
the black of piano keys and starless skies, darkened by all the times he'd shed his human form for the one that waited beneath the surface. August turned away from the mirror. He pulled on fresh fatigues and stepped into the hall. Allegro was there, chasing a piece of lint, but when the cat saw him, he shied back, and when August reached to pet him, the cat recoiled from his touch, black ears going flat against his head. He let out a small hiss and scurried away. August frowned, following Allegro into the kitchen where the cat darted between Ilsa's legs. She crouched, hauling the creature up into her arms and planting a kiss on his nose before lobbing a questioning look at August. He took another step toward her, toward the cat, but Allegro hissed in warning. What was it Ilsa said about animals? They could sense the difference between good and bad, human and monster. For a second, only a second, that other piece of himself, the piece he'd put away, tried to surface, stunned and hurt by the cat's rebuff, by what it meant. But August forced it under.
"It will weaken," promised Leo. "It will fade."
Ilsa's eyes narrowed.
"What have you done?"
August stiffened.
"What I had to."
Her mouth turned down as she folded her arms protectively around the cat and shook her head. There were no words to that, none that August could read.
"What is it?"
he demanded. But she just kept shaking her head as if unable to stop, and August prickled. He didn't understand what she was trying to say, what she wanted from him. He pushed a pad of paper across the counter.
"Damn it, Ilsa, just write it down."
His sister pulled back from the paper, from him, as if struck. And then she turned on her heel and swept out. Sara walked in just as Ilsa rushed past. The two nearly collided, but Ilsa had a way of parting the world around her, and the other Sunai leaped gracefully out of her path. A second later, Ilsa's door closed, a single punctuating note, the loudest sound she'd made in months, and August let out a low, hard breath. Sorrow considered him. Their silver hair was swept forward, falling into gray eyes, but August could still tell they were raising an eyebrow.
"Don't ask," he said.
Sorrow shrugged.
"I wasn't planning on it."
August leaned back, shoulders resting against the shelves.
"You are tense," they said.
He closed his eyes and muttered,
"I'm tired."
Another beat of silence.
"I heard about the ambush."
But Sorrow had never been one to stand around, had certainly never gone searching for small talk. He dragged his eyes open.
"What do you want?"
Sorrow straightened, visibly relieved by the end of such an unpleasant task.
"Want has nothing to do with it,"
they said, already turning toward the door.
"There's something you need to see."
August circled the bodies, trying to understand what he was looking at. It was like a riddle, a puzzle, a what's wrong in this picture. Only everything was wrong. In 5 years, he'd seen a lot of death, but he'd never seen anything like this. It wasn't the what that bothered him. It wasn't even the how. It was the why. A full FTF squad was made up of 8 soldiers. A leader, a medic, a tech, a sniper, and crew. It was a rare thing these days to have a full squad. Too often soldiers were picked off, and casualties usually weren't replaced until a group numbered less than 4. And then they were folded into another unit. That morning, Squad 9 had been made up of 7 soldiers. By midday, all of them were dead.
"What happened here?"
asked August, half to himself and half to Sorrow.
"According to control," said the other Sunai, "they were on their way back from a recon mission. Their comms were off, and there's no surveillance on this block."
The bodies lay scattered in the street, a grisly tableau. They hadn't died at night, hadn't been fed on by Corsi. August looked around, then squinted up at the sun. Judging by the angle of the light, this part of the street would have been in shadow all morning. But that didn't explain the 7 corpses. the sudden and simultaneous turn of violence. Bullet casings littered the ground, and a knife lay several feet away, stained to the hilt. But as far as August could tell, Squad 9 hadn't been ambushed, hadn't been attacked by any outside force, human or monstrous. They'd attacked their own team. Not one on six. This wasn't a matter of one soldier going mad. Every one of them had a weapon in hand and a fatal wound. It made no sense. His gaze trailed across their faces, faces he knew and didn't know, faces that had once been people and were now just husks. Like Rez, he thought, fighting down the sense of loss before it could surface. What a waste. Sorrow stood to the side, absently twirling their flute, as if they were standing in a garden instead of a crime scene. The bodies on the ground wore FTF badges, but in Sorrow's eyes, he knew, they were no longer soldiers. They were sinners. And sinners deserved whatever gruesome ends they met. But still, what could possibly drive an entire squad to do this? Was it a symptom of the rift within the compound? No. There was tension, but verbal sparring was one thing, and this was something else entirely. It was too broad a leap between annoyance and this level of aggression. Some kind of foul play, then. A Maokai? He wondered for a moment if the dead soldiers were a message from Alice, some kind of morbid gift laid out like a feast. But the patches weren't missing, and none of the wounds had been made by teeth. No. As gruesome as the deaths were, they were done by men, not monsters.
Does Henry know?
He asked. Of course. Sorrow paired the words with a flat look, as if the thought of not reporting this had never occurred to them. August imagined it hadn't. Henry was human, but he was also the head of the FTF, the general in their makeshift army.
And the council?
He asked. At that, Sorrow shook their head.
Henry wanted you to see it first.
August frowned.
Why?
The Sunai shifted their weight.
He said you've always had a sensitivity, a way of thinking like a human.
He said you study them. The words seemed to make Sorrow uncomfortable.
That you've always wanted to be one of...
I'm a Sunai, said August, bristling, and I don't have a clue what happened here. If Henry wants a human's take, he should send someone else.
Sorrow looked relieved. August turned away from the corpses and started back toward the compound. Chapter 6 Sloane wiped the blood from his hands as he climbed the tower steps. There was something foul about it. In a human's veins, it was warm, vital. Outside, it was nothing but a mess. In the darkened lobby, Maokai lounged on every surface, leaning on stairs and draping themselves over railings. A dozen fangs dotted the dark stone floor, steel collars glinting as they knelt beside their masters. Blood leaked from bite marks on their skin, but Sloane's hunger barely rose at the sight of it. Of them. He'd never had a taste for willing prey. At the sound of his steps, the Maokai stirred, red eyes going to the floor as he passed. Inside the elevator, Sloane let his eyes slide closed. He dreamed of many things, of blood and power and a broken city, of Henry Flynn brought low and the task force on its knees, of August's burning heart in his hand and Catherine's neck beneath his teeth. But as the elevator rose, Sloane longed only for sleep. A few quiet hours before the frenzy of the night. He stepped out of the elevator and into the penthouse, and stopped. Alice had set the place on fire. That was his first thought. He radiated off the steel coffee table where she had dumped what looked like a bucket of hot coals. A variety of tools and kitchen utensils protruded from the burning mess, and four Maokai crouched on the floor in front of her, feasting on a young man. "Before you ask,"
said Alice. It wasn't like the Falstead. I didn't have anything to do with it this time. I've moved on.
What are you talking about?
Asked Sloane. Alice gave an impatient flick of her fingers. Oh, a handful of fangs. They must have snapped. Who knows why? Went and killed each other, so it seems. The Corsi didn't leave much behind. A petty squabble, if I had to guess. Humans are so... She blew on the coals. Temperamental.
And what about them?
Asked Sloane, nodding toward the Maokai. Oh, they volunteered.
For what?
Alice didn't answer. Instead, she took one of the Maokai by the chin, raising his red eyes to hers. Her voice, when she spoke, was different, lower, smoother, almost hypnotic.
Do you want to make me proud?
Yes, whispered the Maokai.
She drew a thin metal bar from the fire, its end a burning red tip.
Alice,
pressed Sloane.
Here's a riddle, she said, her voice threatening with manic cheer. You can banish a Corsi with light, defang a Maokai's bite. But how do you stop a Sunai song?
Sloane thought of Ilsa, the last sound she made before he tore out her throat. You don't have to, said Alice with a smile. You just stop listening. With that, she drove the burning spike into the Maokai's ear. Chapter 7. It didn't feel real until Kate hit the waist. Until she saw the open land, the sprawling nothing, and remembered dragging August's fevered body through the fields to the house. Remembered her mother's room, the man at the door, and the gun in her hand. A single bang, the division between before and after, innocence and guilt, human and monster. She didn't like to think about that. Didn't like to remember that somewhere out there was the monster she'd made. With any luck, it had starved to death in the waste. With any luck, the car shuddered, spluttered, and began to smoke. She swore and guided the dying vehicle onto the empty shoulder. She was 8 miles from the outskirts of V-City. 8 miles and less than 2 hours until dark. Kate got out and rounded the car. The gun sat on the passenger side floor where she dropped it as soon as the barricade was out of sight. She took it up, savoring the weight in her hand, remembering the sweet recoil, and... She ejected the clip from the gun and put both pieces in her bag, hitched it up on her shoulder, and began to run. Her own shadow stretched out in front of her, cast by the sinking sun at her back. And her shoes beat out a steady rhythm on the asphalt. Track had been a mandatory activity back at Layton, and Kate had quickly discovered two things. She loved running, and she hated running in circles. She tried to remember that love now, with nothing but an open road, a straight line ahead. But 2 miles in, she was pretty sure she'd made it all up. 4 miles in, she wished she had a cigarette. 5 miles in, she regretted ever smoking. 7 miles in, she staggered to a jog, and then a walk, a limp, and then a stop, retching on the side of the road. Her head had started aching again, and she wanted to lie down, to close her eyes, but the sun was hovering over the horizon, and the last thing she needed was to be caught out in the waste after dark. She had to keep moving. So she did. Funny how simple things became when you didn't have a choice. Her legs and lungs were on fire by the time she finally reached the green zone. Once upon a time, it had been the richest section of the capital, a place reserved for those who could afford not only to purchase Harker's protection, but to carry on with their lives as if nothing was wrong. Once upon a time, but now it was empty. It would have been easy to assume that everyone in the green had up and left, some kind of mass exodus. It would have been, except for the number of cars in the driveways, and the blood. Long, dry brown stains worn thin by weather and sun, but it was everywhere, splashed like rust against car doors and curbs, garages and steps. An echo of violence.